Rockies Insider with me, Patrick Lyons, your Rockies Insider, talking about some more ballpark bites from this weekend in the D-backs series, a Dodgers preview, and I got some good stuff on Michael Tolia, too. Coming back from a road trip, it's always nice to just get in the clubhouse, get a lay of the land, seeing what's new, seeing what's different, talking with players, catching up on them, what that road trip was like for them. And one of the first interactions I ended up seeing on Friday was Ryan Rolison. He was so excited. He had something to show Clint Hurdle, the bench coach and former hitting coach. Earlier this year, he was the hitting coach. And I was like, thinking to myself, Ryan Rolison and Clint Hurdle, other than being on the Rockies, what do they have in common? What kind of connection? And I saw what Rolison was showing Clint, and he looked, they smiled, they laughed, and Rolison, you know, flipped his magazine to me. And it was that Sports Illustrated back in, gosh, I'm not even sure what year it was, in the late 70s, 78, when Clint Hurdle was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as a big prospect for the Kansas City Royals. And so Rolison got it on eBay. I think he has another one. And apparently Hurdle said, yeah, if you get a copy, if you can find a copy of that Sports Illustrated, I will sign it for you. So Rolison has two autographed edition of Sports Illustrated with Clint Hurdle, a young Clint Hurdle on the cover now 40 years ago, 45 years ago. So that I thought that was really neat. And something that I need to work on for an article, I've been talking with some folks about it. Rockies Clubhouse is wild about Binho. Have you seen this? B-I-N-H-O. It's a fun little game. You could call it a board game, but it's not like you're rolling a die or dice and moving around a board. I had something, gosh, I don't even see it in stores. This is probably going to age myself, but it's called knock hockey. It's like air hockey, but with no air. It's just on a wooden board. But Binho is like a miniature soccer field with almost like 10 bowling pins in front of the goal. So you can't just kick the soccer ball in the goal. You got to hit it with some angles, but you're not kicking it. You're flicking your finger. You're using a little dexterity on your index finger. And this was something that they had in the clubhouse in LA at Dodger Stadium. They had it in Miami, and the guys really seemed to like it, and it helped improve the vibe a little bit in the clubhouse. So Victor Vodnik was kind of at the forefront of it. Reached out to Binho to try to get some for the clubhouse, and they didn't get back to him right away. So, you know, Victor asked the clubhouse manager, Tiny Ponarelli, hey, get a couple of these. So Tiny did, and they got one with Chelsea logo on it and Liverpool. And these guys have been playing. I think I talked about it on the last homestand. And on this one, they actually had a custom Rockies one made. We had black turf with the interlocking CR logo in the middle, with a couple, you know, some purple trim. It was very cool looking. So that has been, you know, taking the clubhouse by storm. And the guys like it. They have a good time. It's helping with the bonding. It's helping keep things loose. And they've been winning a lot more since they've been a little bit looser. The guys were very loose. Now, here's the thing. When it's really hot out, you're loose, but you can also cramp up. Ironic? I don't know. But the first pitch temperatures for Friday and Saturday were bad. In fact, on Saturday, it was the second day in a row that it was 98 degrees. That's tied for the second highest first pitch temperature in franchise history. They had one game back in 2012, June 25th. So again, right at the smack dab start of summer, like this was, where it hit 100 degrees against the Nationals. It later reached 105 degrees at some point in that day in Denver, but 100 was the high in Denver that day. So it's been two really hot ones. And the 98 degrees on both Friday and Saturday have been the hottest first pitch temperature in Major League Baseball this season. I imagine it was like 108 degrees in Arizona at one point, but because they closed the roof and they have the air conditioner, does that change the temperature? Yes. It's got to be, right? Because the Diamondbacks definitely had some scorchers down there earlier on this season. I mean, just a couple weeks ago. And on the East Coast with the humidity, it's got to feel a lot hotter than what the temperature says. So, you know, was it really the hottest? I don't know. But if you're just looking at temperature and forgetting humidity, hottest of the year. You probably saw on Friday, there was that big Ryan meetup where in center field, they had the white t-shirts. Ryan McMahon was wearing one during warmups on Saturday. But now they were trying to set a record, and maybe they did as in terms of the most Ryans ever. But the Guinness Book of Records, World Records, they had an event not that long ago where in Bosnia and Herzegovina, they had 2,325 people named Ivan meet up. And the Ryans, they're not going to out Ivan the Ivans. And now I think there's about 700 tickets sold for the event, not 700 Ryans, but there were 700 tickets sold. So if you're married to a Ryan or you're good friends with a Ryan, you're going to be a part of that ticket package. So, you know, maybe it was more like 500. Regardless, they showed out. You know, they're hoping to like host a Ryan Con and smash the Ivan record, but I don't think that happened. I wasn't paying attention that, oh yeah, Ryan Harris, who was on the Super Bowl 50 championship winning Denver Broncos team throughout the first pitch. I saw that and it didn't resonate with me. Ryan Rollison was there to catch the first pitch. It was pretty wild. The section in center field, every time a Ryan was announced, they went crazy. Thankfully, Ryan Thompson, reliever for the Diamondbacks, didn't warm up, didn't get in that game. That would have been a little confusing. But before and after every Ryan Ritter and Ryan McMahon at bat, they went crazy. When Ritter doubled in his first at bat, he did acknowledge the Ryans in center field. He did directly give them some love. But when McMahon homered, he did not. Let's be clear. He did not acknowledge the Ryans. Now, he did put his hand up, but that is to acknowledge the relievers in the bullpen in right center field. So that was not for the Ryans. I hate to do that to you, Ryans out there, but that was not for you. I did ask McMahon on his way out, leaving the clubhouse, you know, did you hear the cheering each time? And he said, quote, "I heard them for all the Ryans." So I'm not sure all the Ryan announcement, all of the Ryan chants, because they were pumped up with all the Ryans. So that was some silliness, but I think a good kind of silly. That definitely helped some things out. On Sunday, you might remember that Ryan Ritter struck out when he bunted a ball foul with two strikes. That's the rule. If you're bunting with two strikes and it's foul, it is considered a strikeout. Schaefer did say in the post game on Sunday that Ritter did that of his own volition. That was his choice, and the bunt was on to start the at-bat to get the runner over, which probably would have resulted in an RBI, no harm, no foul, as they did win on Sunday 4-2. We had a fly ball in the next at-bat, so you got to think sack fly there. But Schaefer said, hey, can't fault him for that, for trying to make up for not getting the bunt down in the first two at-bats, or rather the first two pitches. Saturday was the University of Nebraska night. Now, they do these special edition hats that is part of a ticket package where, again, if you buy it, boom, you get the hat. So it's not a giveaway. They actually sold out. This is the first time I think I've ever seen something like that happen at Coors Field. Because usually, if you go to Rockies Fest, anyone that's gone to Rockies Fest knows, if you go to the garage sale, they always have the university caps on a severe markdown. Are they a buck? I don't know. They might even be less than $5, but they've got them all for Air Force, Wyoming, CSU, Metro State, UNC, you name it. But you might not be getting one. They usually order extra, so maybe they'll have some Nebraska ones. So if you didn't get one now, I hate to tell you, you might not get one during Rockies Fest. The attendance on Saturday, the best of the series, not great overall, but it was 34,000, and the Rockies reached 1 million in total attendance at Coors Field here in game number 36, the same amount of time it took them to do that last year. They're still down about 614 per game over the first 36 dates. There was 28,000 on Sunday, so I'm not sure if that keeps pace or not. With the Dodgers in town Tuesday through Thursday, I don't know that we're going to get sellouts. I don't know. I did go online to look to see what the ticket sale situation is. I think you can get in on Tuesday for like $22, you know, just for the worst seat in the house. Not too bad. Not too bad to see Ohtani and company. But I did look, you know, if you were going through Ticketmaster and getting through the Rockies, just to see what the ticket availability was like. And it did look like they were a lot sold. So maybe, you know, for a Tuesday through Thursday series with attendance not having been so great this past weekend, might be a big uptick. The Reds made me take notice this past weekend. First, with Garrett Hampson getting designated for assignment, he was picked up by the Reds after he was let go by the Diamondbacks. Only played 9 games in his Reds career, went 3-for-18, double walk, 6 strikeouts, played all over, all 3 infield positions except first base, left field, and center. And the other one was the call-up, the promotion of their top pitching prospect, Chase Burns, who was the number 2 pick in the 2024 MLB draft, got a nice $9 million signing bonus. And he is now the 5th player taken in the first round from last year's draft to make their debut. So that's certainly something when, you know, you're talking about Charlie Condon and looking at the Rockies closely and carefully and saying, hey, they need to get more out of the guys that they draft. They need to produce stars. They need to get something. They need to get everyday players out of the draft. And, you know, time will tell with Charlie Condon. We got a long way to go. He's still playing pretty well. I don't even want to say he's cooled down at Spokane because he's pretty much got a hit every day this past week against the Everett Aqua Sox. But, you know, there's just a lot of other players that are, you know, not in need of as much seasoning down in the minor leagues from the recent draft classes. So that's been interesting. It's been interesting to see Michael Tolia play a little bit better Sunday. You know, the strikeout was back in the game just a little bit. But Schaefer has said that, you know, since Tolia has been promoted, he's been a lot more calm, a lot more confident. And, you know, he had the right mentality when he got option to AAA. That's obviously a bummer when you hit 25 home runs and then you're not getting it done offensively on a team that just isn't getting it done to begin with. You'd think that's, you know, like neither here nor there, but for him as an individual, he had to go down and work on a couple of things. And, you know, he got himself into a better mindset, a better mental space, and he's brought that back with him to the Rockies. I sort of thought that, you know, maybe he put some pressure on himself going into this season after hitting 25 home runs last year. And, you know, Schaefer didn't necessarily take that and say, yeah, you know, he's put pressure. I think every guy has a certain amount of pressure. But what he did say was, that the next step for Tolia isn't necessarily hitting 30 home runs or 40 home runs, which now at this point in the year, you say it might be too late for that. But the next step in a guy like Michael Tolia's career is to do it again, is to have that consistency, is to, you know, when you're trying to establish yourself, improve yourself, it's just to continue to do the same things that you've done before, but now do it again, do it for a second time, not have that sophomore slump. Tolia was not a rookie last year, but he was, it was the first time that he really broke out and had himself really a complete full season, despite the fact that he did spend a little bit of time in AAA in Albuquerque, but it was his first full season. And just doing that again is proving yourself, is validating your success, doing it defensively, providing great defense as he's been. So it's been consistency. That's been the next step. Schaefer said that if you try to force yourself to take the next step, it usually doesn't work out. You know, you find that to be true for guys who maybe look too far ahead or just don't play the game that's right in front of you. I mean, let's not forget Kyle Freeland, 4th place finish in NL Cy Young Award voting in 2018. And what happened to him the next year? Option to AAA. Because, well, I'm not going to say what it was because, but you could certainly look and say, you know, is he already looking ahead a little bit too far rather than taking one game at a time, doing what you need to do in the offseason, which he absolutely did. But you can get ahead of yourself in this game and it can humble you. As Clint Hurdle likes to say, there's 2 types of players. Those who have been humbled and those who will be humbled. And, you know, Michael Tolia got humbled a little bit earlier this year, and now he's back, and he's been humbled now, and he's ready to move forward. JD, welcome back to the chat, saying, a month ago, I predicted the Rockies will have the 28th best MLB record this season. That's an improvement, right? They were last. Now they're moving up the totem pole a little bit. I mean, they still have the worst record in all of baseball right now. In fact, you're going to make me want to pull up the standings and find out exactly where they're at and who else has been struggling. You know, the White Sox, okay, only 25 wins, 53 losses, but the Rockies are still 7 wins away from that. You've got also in the National League, the Pirates, 31 wins. So yeah, the White Sox are still many games ahead of the Rockies, still 7 just in the win column alone. So it's going to be a lot. I don't think the Rockies necessarily care where they're at in terms of 1 through 30. They just got to get their house in order and get more out of their guys, which is something that they've been doing. This series against the Dodgers, though, which starts Tuesday, June 24th, 6:40 p.m. start. In my notes, I had written, are we going to get Shohei Ohtani throwing the first inning on Tuesday with Justin Robleski taking over after the first? No, because Ohtani pitched on Sunday. I figured he wasn't going to pitch at altitude. I figured he was going to pitch at Denver, but my hopes were very high after Saturday night, and we hadn't seen him throw another outing with the Dodgers in a game that really counted. So we're not going to get Ohtani, but could get Justin Robleski against Hermen Marquez, 3-8 with a 6.11 ERA on Tuesday. Wednesday, same 6:40 start time. Chase Dolander, his first start against the Dodgers. Really looking forward to seeing how he handles that, you know, getting an opportunity to learn something, even if it goes poorly, even if, you know, he takes the loss, even if, you know, he doesn't go too deep in this game, which he has gone deep in his last two against some formidable foes. But this is going to be a learning experience for him. He's going to learn a lot more pitching against the Dodgers on Wednesday than he will pitching against the Las Vegas Aviators in AAA. So regardless of the result, this is where he needs to be. He'll be pitching against Yoshinobu Yamamoto. He's 6-6 with a 2.76 ERA. Crazy. You have a sub-3 ERA, and you have as many losses as wins. Yamamoto, you might recall, did make a start last year at Coors Field. Lasted 5 innings, allowed just 2 runs, struck out 6, didn't walk a single batter. We'll see how he ends up faring. And then on Thursday, Austin Gomber against Clayton Kershaw, the battle of the left-handers. Kershaw 3-0 with a 3.31 ERA. This will be his 28th start. Kershaw's 28th start at Coors Field, other than Dodger Stadium, that is ties him for the most starts at any visiting ballpark. Oracle Park, he also has 28 starts at, most away from Dodger Stadium. His Oracle Park ERA is 1.64. His Coors Field ERA, 3 runs higher than that, 4.64. If you're curious, he's got 23 starts at Chase Field at a 4.08 ERA and 22 at Petco, 2.23 ERA. Dry air equals bad pitching. Arizona, Colorado, okay. A little bit of an ocean breeze. He's been absolutely excellent. Rockies, you know, they continue to struggle with runners in scoring position in those big spots. They've been a little bit better now, under Warren Schaefer, trying to do those little things, advance the run of the 90 feet, but the Dodgers, no issues whatsoever entering Sunday. The Dodgers had 34 home runs with runners in scoring position. That leads the majors, and their 92 walks is tops in the NL with runners in scoring position. Will Smith, who very well is going to be the National League starting catcher in the All-Star game, has an MLB best 433 batting average. Not on base percentage, batting average. Guaranteed for a base hit. Every other opportunity that he gets, pretty darn good. 4 home runs with Ducks on the Ponds. Tommy Edmond, right after him with 378 batting average. Andy Páez, who I think has a decent shot. He might not be the first round of All-Stars. If somebody gets hurt, I could see him possibly getting added. But Páez, 375 with runners in scoring position. And then he also got Hye-Sung Kim, the second baseman utility man. He's 10 for 20. So he's batting .500 in a more limited basis. Clutch with those opportunities. And that's what this three-game series is going to be about, is that even if the Rockies should happen to jump out in front and get a lead, the Dodgers will grind. The Dodgers do not give away at-bats. They continue to play hard no matter who they're against. Even when they're against the best teams, when they're against a team that has the worst record in Major League Baseball, you know damn well that they are not going to take their foot off the gas. And they're going to say, yeah, we can win this game. We're down by 3 runs. That's one swing of the bat. One swing of the bat in this ballpark in particular. So, you know, the Dodgers are not going to be a pushover by any means, even with, you know, a big first inning or a big first couple of innings for the Rockies. The Dodgers are going to play this one tough, and you better believe they're going to want to get all three. And the Diamondbacks weren't able to do that. And, you know, we're going to see the difference between a team like the Diamondbacks that's a little bit middling. They're about a 500 club. They've had their injuries. I think they're a lot better. I had them going to the postseason, but that was before everybody had Tommy John surgery. But even still, the Dodgers with their, 17 pitchers on the IL, something crazy like that, they are just a team that can get it done and that they have a much better track record than the Diamondbacks. And they are in two different classes. The Diamondbacks are really, really good. The Dodgers are great. And it's going to be hard for the Rockies to win a game. And it's going to be hard for them to even hold on to a win should they get ahead. So I'm really looking forward to this three-game set. At Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons, MLB and Rockies Insider. Head on over to social media. Give me some love and support there. Certainly would appreciate it. And that momentum, I can feel it through the airwaves, through the podcast waves. But unfortunately, momentum like that, it's only as good as my next show. So, of course, I'll talk to you then.